In addition to just the readings and prayers of Mass, sometimes the church will give us each weekend a theme every now and then, or a special celebration. In this weekend in the United States, the United States bishops have chosen to set aside as Priesthood Sunday. On one hand, that's a little bit interesting thing then to have to preach about. Like, great, feast day in honor of priests, me. So now I have to talk about priesthood, and especially priests that don't like to talk about themselves a whole lot, that can be rather difficult. So I do think it is important, though, that we talk about priesthood in general and this great, great gift that our Lord has given us in the Holy Priesthood. Because ultimately, we need to be thankful for our priests, and we need more of them. We need to look back and give thanks for all the ways that God has used the priesthood, not just throughout history, but in our own individual lives, the way that priests have touched us. And perhaps some people listening today, or your own children or grandchildren, might be inspired to answer a call to the priesthood. You know, as I look at the origin of the New Testament priesthood, going back to that upper room on Holy Thursday almost 2,000 years ago, I look at the men that Jesus picked to be priests. We just yesterday celebrated the feast of Simon and Jude, two of those apostles, and the readings yesterday remind us that Jesus spent the whole night in prayer, trying to decide who he would choose as his apostles. So we know that this was not some arbitrary decision, it was not a mistake, it was very deliberate. And yet, I can't help but notice that Jesus chose as his apostles none of the people that would make sense. After all, just in a worldly sense, we would say Jesus is about to start a new religious movement. He's going to start a big new corporation that will one day span the globe. You would think that to do that, the choice of the first leaders would be very, very important. In fact, if I were picking the leaders, or any of us, we might first think, well, gosh, you'd want to have some of the scribes, the Pharisees, the Sadducees. These are the people that know the faith the best. I mean, they've been studying the law. They know it inside and out. They know all of God's commandments and how to keep them and what to do. And they know all the religious rituals. They are politically influential people. These are the kind of people that, at least I would think, would make good people to choose to lead the church. You know, most especially, I would look at the people who had really proven themselves around Jesus. And above all, you'd have to look at his mother Mary, the most perfect disciple that there ever was, that said yes to Jesus and God's plan in every way. She would be the ideal leader of the whole thing. Put Mary in charge of the church. That would be amazing. And yet, the people that Jesus chooses are the most unlikely of characters. He chooses a bunch of fishermen, zealots, tax collectors, and even one who he says is going to betray me. And he knows Judas will betray him, and he picks him anyway. It's just amazing to see why Jesus does this. Why would you do that? I mean, you pick Peter to be the head of the church, to be the rock on which everything else will stand firm. And the first thing he does after being ordained in the upper room is later the same evening he goes out and denies that he even knows Jesus. Not so good for the rock. You know, the very night he was ordained a priest. And all the other apostles likewise run away. None of them are to be found on Calvary the next day other than St. John. You talk about Mary being an ideal leader of the church. She was there at the cross. What about all the other women that didn't abandon Jesus, that were at the foot of the cross? Why not make them the leaders of your church? Why not them the first priests? Here's what I've come to in my own kind of estimation of why Jesus does what he does in choosing his priests. I think that if he had chosen the people we think would have made good leaders, even ones that the world would consider to be the best leaders, I think there might be a tendency, years later, when the church has become so successful as it is, it's everywhere now, it is spread, there would be, I think, a temptation to say, the Catholic Church, it is so great because it has had such amazing priests. The leaders of the church, my goodness, those early leaders, they were incredible. The way they carefully balanced the budget of the early church, came up with their four-point plans of how to lead properly the governance of the church. We would think that the success of the church could somehow be contributed to some earthly endeavor, and most especially because, well, we have just had such amazing leaders. Well, we only have to look at the apostles right from the beginning to know that that cannot be the case. The apostles, by earthly standards, were not off to a very good start in their role as priests. In fact, as we look across the history of the Catholic Church, we have to say that, well, we've had some good priests, but we've had some real scoundrels too. Some priests that have done some really bad things. Priests, bishops, popes even. It cannot be because of incredible leadership or any other earthly attribution that the Catholic Church has lasted 2,000 years, 266 popes, the longest institution running in the history of any governance in the world. That cannot be because of great leadership or anything that we've done. It can only be because of the supernatural promise of Jesus to remain with his church and that the gates of hell will not prevail against it. To celebrate priesthood and Priesthood Sunday is ultimately to celebrate the priesthood of the one eternal great high priest, Jesus Christ. His is the priesthood from which all others are taken, and it is only through his protection, his divine leadership of the church, that we have managed not to completely wreck it over the course of our history. And that should give us great confidence then, that we needn't despair, that somehow we will be able to wreck the church, or that we are not choosing the right leaders, or that earthly leaders could get the whole church off. We needn't worry about that. They tried to do that at the beginning. We've tried to do it over and over. If we have not managed to destroy the church yet, we can be sure that it's made to last. And indeed, Jesus promises us as much. So today, we can give thanks for the priesthood in general, the institution created by Jesus, by which he continues actively present in the world to give us the sacraments, to bring us his grace, to guide and govern the church. We can be thankful for that, apart from any people who would hold the office of priest. But I'd also today like to think about some individuals who have been priests. We're getting ready to celebrate this week All Saints Day. I can't help but notice that so many of those in the roles of our saints have been priests. But I'm especially struck by the fact that given all these people that have been priests, they are so different. We have priests of every kind of walk of life, smart priest, less smart priest, old priest, young priest, priests that were only priests for a few days, priests that were priests for 80 years. There's this incredible diversity of men that God has chosen to be his priest for reasons known only to himself. I look at the saints and I think of the great intellectual powerhouses, the great theologians like St. Thomas Aquinas, who wrote so much theology, we're still unpacking, or St. Augustine, these men who just wrote and wrote and taught and were just incredible intellectuals, great priests. But then you think about alongside them as their brother priests, our priests like St. Joseph of Cupertino, one of my favorites. Saint Joseph, God bless him, was so not smart that he practically got kicked out of second grade. He couldn't even finish that far in school, and most people would have considered him dumb. But he loved Jesus so much, and Jesus revealed to him that he wanted him to be a priest. And at that time, you had to pass a lot of academic tests, just like it is today. And so Joseph was like, I can't be a priest. Well, through God's beautiful intervention, when it came time for his test to become a priest, he was asked the one question that he knew the answer to. And so he passed his test. And so St. Joseph Cupertino is the patron saint of students and test takers. And often students who have been not studying very well think they can throw in a quick prayer to Joseph Cupertino right before their test to help them. I also like St. Joseph Cupertino because he is the patron saint of aviators, because he loved Jesus so much that when he would pray, he would actually levitate and lift off the ground, and his friar brothers would say that he would literally fly around the chapel. So he is the patron saint of priest pilots as well. So I appreciate that. Can you imagine being one of the brothers of St. Joseph? Oh, there goes Joseph, flying around the chapel again. Can you please come down? We'd like to continue with the prayer. I mean, it just, and he's a priest. Not smart enough to read a word of what Aquinas wrote, and yet flies around the chapel. He's so in love with God, and he's a priest. We think of great martyr priests like St. Maximilian Kolbe. Priest died in Auschwitz. Famously, you might know the story that a bunch of prisoners were rounded up, and they were going to kill one of them, and they had selected a man with a family to die, and St. Maximilian Kolbe steps up and says, "No, take me instead." And the guard's like, "Who are you?" He's like, "I'm a Catholic priest." And he gives his life for this family man who is then freed from prison later and is able to come and give thanks to St. Maximilian Kolbe, who, in his own words, "I'm just a priest." Just a priest. And yet, how many saints, how many men have we seen who are just priests, and yet God has used to do so many incredible things in our lives? And I think it's necessary that we get a little personal about it, to think in our own lives how many times the priest has been there for us, especially at those significant times in our life. Not just the sacraments, but priests that we've known as friends, priests that have been there to guide and counsel us. I pray in my own life for priests that have been special, for Father Carl Pfister, who baptized me years ago, who I really don't have many memories of. I got to meet just on a few occasions, but I pray for him. And I remember Father Tom Hesse, who gave me my first communion. I never saw him again after I made my first communion until I was a baby priest in Topeka, and we had a social gathering, and he was there and introduced, "I'm Father Tom Hesse." I'm like, "It's you." It's like, "What do you mean? You gave me my first communion like 25 years ago. Your name's on my certificate. I see it all the time. I pray for you." It's like, "Wow, that's great." And now we met, and Father Tom is a great priest living out the twilight of his life in Topeka and still serving wonderfully. And I think of Archbishop Strecker, who confirmed me and sealed me with the beautiful gift of the Holy Spirit. And I think of the great priest that inspired me when I was in college to study theology and to grow deeper with Jesus. Some in big ways, like Pope St. John Paul the Great, who inspired me with his call to be not afraid, to say yes even to priesthood and to put out into the deep. I think of a priest like that, Monsignor Vince Crisci, who led the St. Lawrence Center, was always telling us, I'm not gonna tell you what you want to hear. I got to tell you what you need to hear, because I got to answer for my soul, and so do you. I'm like, if I were going to be a priest, I'd want to be a priest like that. And I think even just a simple priest, Father Ray May at the center, whose door was always open, and I came by and saw he was playing with Microsoft Flight Simulator in there. I'm like, "Whoa, you're a priest and you like to fly? Maybe I could be a pilot one day." So many ways that even when I was having difficulties in relationships with girls and couldn't find the right person to date, I would go to a priest, say, "Father, I'm all a mess. What can I do?" And many times a priest has been there in my life to help me and give me counsel over these years, and I'm so grateful. Priests need priests, and to this day, I continue to weigh so heavily on priests to be there for me with the sacraments, their friendship, their guidance, to be, for me, that beautiful sign of Jesus' love in the world. Probably each of you has a story like that, probably many of them, where you can say that a priest was a special part of your family. I've got friends where they say, "I'm their family priest. You're part of our family, Father." It's an amazing kind of thing that you get to do as a priest. I have to say that it's especially meaningful for me now to be here. You know, I had been an associate pastor for 5 years before I went away to study canon law. And although you're associate and you kind of have a parish family, you're still not the pastor. And especially these last 3 years, I loved being in Washington and studying canon law And although I got to celebrate Mass in a lot of great places, like the beautiful Basilica, the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, or some of the Cathedral of St. Matthew and other places, there was never quite a family home. I was always just a priest who happened to be at a place. I got to tell you, since coming here, just now only a few months ago, it is so wonderful to not just be a priest, but to be your priest, to be a part of this beautiful family here. That is a very special gift as a priest, and you all so lift me up with your prayers. You're always telling me, Father, we prayed for you. We offered our family rosary for you. We offered our communion for you. It's amazing. Last night, I was with the Archbishop and Bishop Johnston and Bishop Papraki from Springfield. We had the Red Mass up in Kansas City. Red Mass is a traditional Mass celebrated for lawyers and judges and politicians. This was always done in Washington. I went to it with the Supreme Court. So we had the first meeting of the Catholic Bar Association and had the Red Mass. And afterwards at the dinner, Governor Sam Brownback was our keynote speaker. And he gave what I would have to say is the most inspiring religious testimony I've ever seen from a politician. Just speaking from the heart, just speaking to us. And he said something that really hit me. Because he said in his own life, the higher I go, the more I know I need God. I pray now more than I ever have. And people tell me that they're praying for me, and I need that. And I thought, you know, the governor certainly gets it. When he first got to Topeka, he asked the Archbishop, can I get a key to Assumption Parish across the street from the Capitol? Because sometimes I want to go pray, and it's not open. He knows he needs God. And how much true for a pastor, for a priest. I think how weak and vulnerable I am, and how much the governor also said that the higher you go, the more you're attacked, the more Satan is out to get you. And that is certainly true of the priesthood. You very much do feel that with all the good we do, with all the progress forward, we have real enemies out there who don't want to see that. And you help. Your prayers, I often wonder, as a mess as I am, what would it be like without all you praying for me? It would just be hopeless. So I want to thank you in the best way I can to know that those prayers really make a difference. Your support, your prayers for your priest. And I know it's not just me. The love that you have and have showed me is because of a long line of priests before me who have worn the collar with great honor and have inspired you to love the priesthood. I pray that I can continue to be worthy of your trust in that, and I thank you for the way you've welcomed me. I want to end with a prayer, a poem really, that someone gave me to talk a little bit about all those moments in life when a priest is there. A priest that is present at the most vulnerable, at the joyful, at all those times in our lives that are so special. If you think about it, often there has been a priest there. I am blessed to be one of those, and also very much in need of priests at these same moments. So I leave you with this prayer that would hopefully draw our attention to the beautiful gift of the priesthood. This prayer is called the Beautiful Hands of a Priest. We need them in life's early morning. We need them again at its close. We feel their warm clasp of true friendship. We seek it when tasting life's woes. When we come to this world, we are sinful, the greatest as well as the least. And the hands that make us pure as angels are the beautiful hands of a priest. At the altar, each day, we behold them. And the hands of a king on his throne are not equal to them in their greatness. Their dignity stands alone. For there, in the stillness of morning, ere the sun has emerged from the east, there God rests between pure fingers of the beautiful hands of a priest. When we are tempted and wander to pathways of shame and sin, 'tis the hand of a priest that absolves us, not once, but again and again. And when we are taking life's partner, other hands may prepare us a feast, But the hands that will bless and unite us are the beautiful hands of a priest. God bless them and keep them all holy. For the host which their fingers caress, what can a poor sinner do better than to ask him who chose them to bless? When the death dews are on our lids and falling, may our courage and strength be increased by seeing raised o'er us in blessing the beautiful hands of a priest.